think that was, urges Caesar.
Maybe, because for the first time, there was a chance I could keep him, I say.
Behind a cameraman, I see Haymitch give a sort of huff with relief, and I know I've said the right thing. Caesar pulls out a handkerchief and has to take a moment because he's so moved.
I can feel Peter press his forehead into my temple, and he asks,
So now that you've got me, what are you going to do with me?
I turn into him. Put you somewhere you can't get hurt. And when he kisses me, people in the room actually sigh.
For Caesar, this is a natural place to segue into all the ways we did get hurt in the arena, from burns to stings to wounds. But it's not until we get around to the mutts that I forget I'm on camera, when Caesar asks Peter how his new leg is working out.
New leg, I say, and I can't help reaching out and pulling up the bottom of Peter's pants.
Oh, no,
I whisper, taking in the metal and plastic device that has replaced his flesh.
No one told you?
Asks Caesar gently. I shake my head.
I haven't had the chance, says Peter with a slight shrug.
It's my fault, I say, because I used that tourniquet.
Yes, it's your fault I'm alive, says Peter. He's right, says Caesar. He'd have bled to death for sure without it.
I guess this is true, but I can't help feeling upset about it to the extent that I'm afraid I might cry. And then I remember everyone in the country is watching me, so I just bury my face in Peter's shirt. It takes them a couple of minutes to coax me back out, because it's better in the shirt, where no one can see me. And when I do come out, Caesar backs off questioning me so I can recover. In fact, he pretty much leaves me alone until the berries come up.
Katniss, I know you've had a shock, but I've got to ask. The moment when you pulled out those berries, what was going on in your mind,
He says. I take a long pause before I answer, trying to collect my thoughts. This is the crucial moment where I either challenge the Capitol or went so crazy at the idea of losing Peter that I can't be held responsible for my actions. It seems to call for a big, dramatic speech, but all I get out is one almost inaudible sentence.
I don't know. I just couldn't bear the thought of being without him.
Peter, anything to add? Asks Caesar. No, I think that goes for both of us, he says.
Caesar signs off, and it's over. Everyone's laughing and crying and hugging, but I'm still not sure until I reach Haymitch.
Okay, I whisper.
Perfect, he answers.
I go back to my room to collect a few things, and find there's nothing to take but the Mockingjay pin Madge gave me. Someone returned it to my room after the games. They drive us through the streets in a car with blackened windows, and the train's waiting for us. We barely have time to say goodbye to Cinna and Portia, although we'll see them in a few months, when we tour the districts for a round of victory ceremonies. It's the Capitol's way of reminding people that the Hunger Games never really go away. We'll be given a lot of useless plaques, and everyone will have to pretend they love us. The train begins moving, and we're plunged into night, until we clear the tunnel, and I take my first free breath since the reaping. Effie is accompanying us back, and Haymitch, too, of course. We eat an enormous dinner, and settle into silence in front of the television to watch a replay of the interview. With the Capitol growing farther away every second, I begin to think of home, of Prim, and my mother, of Gale. I excuse myself to change out of my dress and into a plain shirt and pants. As I slowly, thoroughly wash the makeup from my face and put my hair in its braid, I begin transforming back into myself, Katniss Everdeen. A girl who lives in the seam, hunts in the woods, trades in the hob. I stare in the mirror as I try to remember who I am and who I am not. By the time I join the others, The pressure of Peeta's arm around my shoulders feels alien. When the train makes a brief stop for fuel, we're allowed to go outside for some fresh air. There's no longer any need to guard us. Peeta and I walk down along the track, hand in hand, and I can't find anything to say now that we're alone. He stops to gather a bunch of wildflowers for me. When he presents them, I work hard to look pleased, because he can't know that the pink and white flowers are the tops of wild onions and only remind me of the hours I've spent gathering them with Gale. Gale. The idea of seeing Gale in a matter of hours makes my stomach churn. But why? I can't quite frame it in my mind. I only know that I feel like I've been lying to someone who trusts me, or more accurately, to two people. I've been getting away with it up to this point because of the games, but there will be no games to hide behind back home.
"What's wrong?" Peeta asks.
"Nothing," I answer. We continue walking, past the end of the train, out where even I'm fairly sure there are no cameras hidden in the scrubby bushes along the track. Still, no words come. Haymitch startles me when he lays a hand on my back. Even now, in the middle of nowhere, he keeps his voice down.
"Great job, you two. Just keep it up in the district until the cameras are gone. We should be okay."
I watch him head back to the train, avoiding Peeta's eyes.
"What's he mean?" Peeta asks me.
"It's the capital. They didn't like our stunt with the berries," I blurt out.
"What? What are you talking about?" he says.
"It seemed too rebellious, so Haymitch has been coaching me through the last few days, so I didn't make it worse," I say.
"Coaching you, but not me," says Peeta.
"He knew you were smart enough to get it right," I say.
"I didn't know there was anything to get right," says Peeta. "So, what you're saying is, these last few days, and then I guess, back in the arena, that was just some strategy you two worked out?"
"No, I mean, I couldn't even talk to him in the arena, could I?" I stammer.
"But you knew what he wanted you to do, didn't you?" says Peeta.
I bite my lip.
"Katniss!"
He drops my hand, and I take a step as if to catch my balance.
"It was all for the games," Peeta says. "How you acted."
"Not all of it," I say, tightly holding on to my flowers.
"Then how much? No, forget that. I guess the real question is, what's going to be left when we get home?" he says.
"I don't know. The closer we get to District 12, the more confused I get," I say.
He waits for further explanation, but none's forthcoming. "Well, let me know when you work it out," he says,
and the pain in his voice is palpable. I know my ears are healed because, even with the rumble of the engine, I can hear every step he takes back to the train. By the time I've climbed aboard, Peeta has disappeared into his room for the night. I don't see him the next morning either. In fact, the next time he turns up, we're pulling into District 12. He gives me a nod, his face expressionless. I want to tell him that he's not being fair, that we were strangers, that I did what it took to stay alive, to keep us both alive in the arena, that I can't explain how things are with Gale because I don't know myself, that it's no good loving me because I'm never going to get married anyway, and he'd just end up hating me later instead of sooner. That if I do have feelings for him, it doesn't matter, because I'll never be able to afford the kind of love that leads to a family, to children. And how can he, after what we've just been through? I also want to tell him how much I already miss him, but that wouldn't be fair on my part. So we just stand there silently, watching our grimy little station rise up around us. Through the window, I can see the platforms thick with cameras. Everyone will be eagerly watching our homecoming. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Peeta extend his hand. I look at him, unsure.
"One more time?"
for the audience, he says. His voice isn't angry. It's hollow, which is worse. Already the boy with the bread is slipping away from me. I take his hand, holding on tightly, preparing for the cameras, and dreading the moment when I will finally have to let go. This is Carolyn McCormick. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler, executive producer Cheryl Smith. Music by Robert Kessler and Rocco Cambereri. Text copyright 2008 by Suzanne Collins. Production copyright 2008 Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible Kids hopes you have enjoyed this audiobook. For more like it, check out kids.audible.com.